Where's the wire?
Okay, this is side two, continuing interview with Wilbur Hansbarger, and he's discussing what kamikaze attacks were like.
You know, they used to come in, we laid smoke screens at night because they used to come in the evening or at dawn, and they come in pretty low to the water, and you couldn't see them until they come up in the air and then come down. I think I couldn't figure out why anybody would, kill himself. But I guess you just talk to you long enough, maybe it's a good thing for them. But some of them planes, they look like they're fairly old planes, but they seem to maneuver around pretty good. I don't know, I suppose I've probably seen 30 or 40 of them, I suppose, while I was at the Okinawa area there. And a lot of them would get most of the destroyers out and around the islands there kind of warn us when stuff like that was coming in, and they took the brunt of the kamikazes. And with our LCMs, we went out and got a few destroyers and took them in with our LCMs. Didn't go very fast, but you could get them in. I know one night, evening, they sent us out, one got hit and blew the whole front end off of it. And it was Mel Link from Chicago, he's on one side, and we was on the other side. And we got it into the harbor, and we got it up to the dock, and couldn't get it in the dock, had a piece bent down. They got that off, and so we stayed all night because there was a man in one compartment that was from Wyoming, and he had six kids, and they were going to try to get him out first. And so he stayed there all night long until they got him out, but it didn't hold. The compartment filled with water, and so he drowned in there. But they thought they had the compartment sealed and he was going to be all right, but it didn't work out that way. But the kamikazes is an awful lot of damage. And when I got into Japan at Sasebo, it seemed where all they were trained and the kamikaze corps, and it was right near Sasebo in Japan where they trained them and stuff, and they were strutted around like peacocks, and probably they could then, the war was over, they weren't going to have to go anymore.
What do you suppose it was that influenced you to fight and keep going day to day? What motivated you?
Well, somebody had to do it, and I was young, and I didn't really worry too much about things. And they pretty much knew we had to do it, and just did it. I think probably the hardest thing is trying to, like at Okinawa, you so short of men and boats and stuff, and you'd just go out, you'd work 48 hours, and then they give us 24 off. Well, sometimes in that 24 off, you sleep the whole thing, or try to write a letter home or something, and well, boom, you're right back out there before you even hardly realize you had 24 hours off. But I and a lot of other guys, we just lean up against something and fall asleep. And we tried to take turns running the boat so we could let somebody lay down and get a nap or something, I don't know, I guess you have to be young, that's why you could do it, I guess. Heck, I wouldn't last a week on it now. It'd be, it'd be totally worn out.
How did you handle that, going without sleep for periods of time like that? Did it affect your performance or anybody else's, you think?
No, I don't think so. We just said take turns running the boat and stuff, and you didn't really have any choice. You know? I told you what you had to do, you did it. And, but like on then they put us on. You know, you're laying a smoke screen. We'd be hauling supplies and men and stuff at the beach stuff all day long, and then we'd go out laying a smoke screen. Well, we'd be lucky we get 3 or 4 hours of sleep in the whole night, you know, so we'd have to kind of take turns sleeping, hauling stuff the next day, you know. And what we did, you know, sometimes we have to, you have to lay off for a few hours before you can take stuff in, and then for sure, you know, somebody get a nap in. And so. But I don't know, you get kind of used to it, I guess. That's what we got. We got a unit citation for the 21 of us. Four. Playing them smoke screens and running day and night, you know. And that's what that one thing is on there for.
What do you suppose was your single greatest fear?
Oh, I think the I think I hated the typhoons about as bad as I hated the kamikazes. I was in 2 typhoons over there. And the one we stayed on an APL, and we had 10 7-ton anchors out and couldn't hold it. And they went to the beach, you know, in the typhoon. And they didn't get hurt or anything, but it was all right. But then the ship I was assigned to was destroyed in one of the typhoons. And they told us to stay on our boats. Well, then finally give up, and we had to land our boats, you know, and get it on a wave, and we took it into the island, and we're on the beach there, and we was about 50 yards from the shore when the boat got to stop. And then the next day some army guys come down with a bulldozer and pushed the boat back into the water. There's 4 or 5 in that one area there, and got it back in the water again. Didn't seem to hurt the boat any, but then we crawled into tents and just tried to wrap up with enough stuff to stay dry, but you couldn't stay dry, just wind driving that the water in right through you. And then one day I stood radio, one typhoon went through, I stood radio watch most of the time. But to get to the radio shack, you had to hang on cable hand over hand and keep them blowing you away. No, they was them people around there that lives around there, they used to typhoons and things like that. Didn't bother them much. I don't know, they just had them old shacks, they just open them up and they still be standing after it's done. Our steel buildings would be flat, but the old shacks they had around there would go through it somehow and still be there. Could learn something from them on how to build buildings, I guess, like for them kind of weather. Yeah, the USS Nestor, I was assigned to that, and that was sunk in the one typhoon there. and I lost some of my stuff there, and because that's where we end up at night, you know, and when we was pretty much done what we had to do, and then all them guys got sent home, and the survivor leave, and that's three we Scott Tunnel and I were complete crew, you know, we were just assigned to work from that, so they didn't send us home, they just moved us over to another ship. But thought that'd been kind of nice, but it didn't work that way. When I got in Japan, and one thing I did, I had to run out of things to do on as far as the boats. Because this officer I had was hauling around, he went back to the States. And so they assigned me to working parties in on the land of Japan. You know, they take us in on the boat, and they pick up them guys, and they put me on. Gee, was here. I was only 19 years old. And they give me 100 guys to get to work, and had a lot of black units, and mostly from Alabama, Mississippi, down in there. I had a heck of a time trying to get them guys to do any work. I wasn't in the house. Finally, a guy told me, he says, you take the 4 or 5 meanest looking one there, or, you know, another guy's could be a little afraid of them, and you have them be your foreman. And so I did that. I got about 4 or 5 of them, and I said, no, you're not supposed to touch anything. You just see that the other guys work. And then I tell them what we had to do and what they wanted us to get done, and boy, that worked just slicker than a whistle. Most of the other guys was afraid of them, you know, and they just enjoyed that. I didn't have any problems from then on. I could handle it real good. But they were nice guys, some of them real nice guys. Some of them just would hide quicker than you. Turn your head, and they was hiding behind something and sleeping. Can't blame for that too much, I guess.
What were the interracial relations like at that time?
Well, we didn't have much in our outfit. There was no blacks at all. And towards the end of the war, they signed 2 of them out of 200. 2 black guys out of 200. And, you know, this guy's from the Middle West. We had no race. There wasn't no race problems with us, you know. Guy's a guy, so what, you know. And, but the ones from the South, they didn't like to be sleeping in the same room with them and stuff. And they kind of adapted to it, pretty much. But some of them guys, I got to be real good friends with them. Was a Stonehawk was his name, and he was just one heck of a nice guy. And I don't know where, I can't remember the town he come from, but he got to be a real good friend. Well, he was friends with everybody. Everybody liked him. But no, there wasn't had too much trouble with race relations. But the only thing that I think probably we didn't like is especially when we was in the, come in, when we was working all day out somewhere and come in at night, you know, they have a movie on, you know. Well, most of the blacks were all cooks and stuff, officer cooks and stuff like that, you know. And they had their nice little white uniforms on, took care of the officers' menu and stuff, and they would take up all the front, put the officer seat up front first. And all these blacks sit in the back, and pretty soon near you ain't got no place to sit, you know. You got to climb up the rigging or something and try to watch a movie. And I got kind of disgusted with that. They had a meeting about it, and I think they got it settled a little bit better, so we'd have a chance to see something. But But it didn't really wasn't that bad a deal. And I was a master at arms just before I got discharged and on this ship, and the officer said we have to take all the coffee machines out of different compartments and coffee makers and stuff, and I don't know, and I was assigned to go down and take care of the black units, and I was the newest one there, so they gave me that job. And but I had no problem. They figured I'd get along with them better. So I went down in there and I told them, I said, "No, this is my order, and I'll tell you what they are." I says, "You have to take your coffee machine out and shut it down, you know." And they says, "What for?" And I says, I ain't got nothing to do with it. But I says, "Well, I won't be back, but as far as I'm concerned, you did it." And the guy said, "Okay." But they never took it out. It kept on running. And everybody else had to take theirs out where the officers would check, you know, but they didn't never go down in that room and check. So it's kind of a joke. It didn't hurt nothing. They made coffee down there anyway.
What? Well, how would you describe your feelings toward the enemy?
I had no bitterness at all. I don't know. Maybe I was supposed to have. I don't know. I was, when they were shooting at me, I was a little bit probably perturbed with it. But I went to Japan there and I met people and had no bad feelings toward them. I think more people like Tojo and them, you know, that set up the war. I don't think the people themselves wanted to fight any probably worse than we did. But no, I got acquainted with a guy. He was went to school in California, college on California and stuff. And we talked about it several times, and he says, "I think that he always figured that the Japanese hierarchy figured that they were strong enough, you know, they could just run over the United States." And he said, and after they found out, after they got a little time in, that they took it, just bit off a whole lot more than they could chew. And found out that the United States was a powerful country once they got started. No, I didn't have no bitterness. I never did, and maybe I should have, I suppose. Why would you? You know, it was over and we won. So.
Were there many casualties in your unit?
No, not so awful many, I suppose. I think in Okinawa, the whole thing hit 80,000 casualties, I think, at Okinawa. And I think that was one of the biggest casualties list they had. But I don't know. I remember Hayes, we lost Hainer. I lost a lot of friends. We wouldn't have as high a casualty as infantry or something like that in boats, landing craft. The running landing craft is kind of two ways to look at it. You know, you go in there and you let off your men. We haul mostly Australians to shore and at Okinawa there. We assigned to Australian ship, and we did different more than once, and we'd take Australians in, and they would land a lot of times. And boy, I'd be glad to get out of here because they're going to start shooting at them. But then the the other hand, sometimes it's been nice to stay in there so you don't get out in open water and you're sitting duck out there, you know. But we never got hit, and never really got shot at with heavy artillery out there. So we was pretty lucky.
What was that like to have friends missing or killed?
It hurts. It hurts a lot, you know. This one guy I got home, I called his parents from the town of Minneapolis there and talked to his parents and told him what a great guy he was and stuff, you know. You may get pretty close to some of these guys. I was lucky, you know, just one of the lucky ones, you know, didn't get scraped. Well, I got cut my long hair. I was during the being shelled, and I was going to my station, and I slipped and cut my lip open, and that's about from here to that door in there from the first aid station, and went in there, and this doctor said, sewed it up right away and sent me right on my way. But it was, it hardly even showed a scar, because you know, you get something done right then, and fix it within a minute, 2 minutes. He just put pants in there and sent me on to my boat. And it never even hardly scarred. That was the only thing serious I had, and of course, I had got. Mosquito disease, you know, I got that, and that didn't bother me too much until I got home. Yellow fever, is it? Anyhow, I had that, I can remember exactly the last time I had it. I was down to Omaha to an auction, and a car auction, and my son was along with a bunch of friends, and we were in the motel, or a hotel there, and close by the auction, and they was all going to the hotel, and all of a sudden, I broke out into the sweat. That's what you usually do, you know, start sweating and getting sick. And so I sent them on, told them to go on over, and I just went to bed, and that just absolutely the last time I ever had any problem with it whatsoever. But it just come on quick and go away quick. I figured I was going to have more of them, but then that was the end of them.
Were you ever put in a situation in your time, probably at Okinawa, where you had to kill the enemy?
No, I've been asked that before, how many guys I kill. If I killed anybody, I don't know. The only thing I can think about, I may have, and if I didn't, great. But we had them, it was coming out in boxes, out from shore under boxes, and they'd get on these ships and cut their throats and stuff, you know, and they was doing a lot of that. And so we'd have the carbines and 30-06s up there, and we'd stand there every time we seen a box moving, we'd shoot it, you know. So very possibly it could have killed somebody, but I remember one night we was sleeping on the boat, and guy from up at the ship up where we was tied up to, he was taking hauling stuff up on it, and it was all down there. Said, "You guys get the heck up there." He said, "There's Japs in the water down there." Well, I was tied up into a kind of a plastic thing, you know, tied up around my neck, and the other two guys, they took off and gone. You know, here I was trying to get this thing untied and off, and I finally got out of there, and that scared me a little bit because I could see, hear water, you know, rippling around and stuff, so then I got up that cargo net, and then they wouldn't let us sleep down there the rest of the night anyhow. So But then that's what they mainly did. That's the only time I could think of a, you know, may have killed somebody, and then and I probably didn't, and I hope I didn't.
Were you awarded any medals or citations?
Just unit commendations.
What are your thoughts on the use of the atomic bomb?
Well, if we hadn't used it, I wouldn't be here. And probably a million other guys wouldn't either. They had the schedule of it. And in fact, my brother sent me this. And of course, I already knew it. This is invasion plans for Japan. And it was a. They told us where we was going to land and the unit I would be in, and it would have been north of Sasebo. And I looked at it, you know, after the war was over, and I doubt if we could have got 1 out of 10 in there alive. I don't know. I just would have been lucky. And this is pretty much the same thing as a. Factual this is, but according to what I looked at it on, it's kind of the way they told us over there. There would be such a small percentage that lived through it that it would took a lot of men. Of course, Japanese would, you know, and had everybody fighting then, the old people and. Even the kids, I think, I mean, the women out there fighting them and trying to invade it. No, I think it was a terrible thing, but then I don't think I would have been here. Probably, you know, maybe a couple million other guys wouldn't have been either. Because there's just no way we could have invaded that. Main island in Japan, or the main islands, out losing a terrible amount of men.
We were talking earlier about the unique and unfortunate circumstances around your 19th birthday. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, it's kind of. Just one of them gruesome things you have to do, I guess. But anyhow, this ship, it took 5 suicide on it. And we had, in fact, one of the guys that almost shot me was one of the guys on the ship's crew. But they just picked up 4 of us and then the officers and stuff. And then we went in there, and then what you do is you take. They get 2 dog tags. You try to tie one around her neck and one on her big toe and lay them out and cover them up. And if the arms are missing and stuff, you'd have to try to find what went to what and so forth. And so there's about 56 men we sorted out and got them into. In plastic bags and stuff, and tied a tag around them. I thought it was a futility, but some of the priests were giving last rites while we were doing that, and I didn't quite understand that. But finally, you know, but it was burnt. So bad from the explosions and stuff, you know. It's really hard to. But I think we did a good job. I think we had it pretty well figured out what was what and who was who. And, yeah, I was 19 years old. It was my 19th birthday, June 2nd. And, I hope I never do that again. I shouldn't have.
Looking at your veterans article in the Independent, there's pretty interesting story about starving kids in Japan. Could you talk about that?
Oh yeah, we went and landed in Okinawa there, of course. And people there, you know, we got a lot of them out of there, you know, but them little kids, you know, they was hungry, and they wanted stuff to eat, you know, and then the LCM, you know, we had an engine compartment, and we'd haul them stuff, we'd accidentally break a case once in a while, we put the stuff down in here so we have something to eat once in a while, you know, and stuff. And these little kids, they come running out, and you know, they was hungry, they was begging, they didn't know what they were saying, stuff, and so we'd go down, one of us would go down in the engine compartment, we'd get some canned goods and stuff to give to them, and their mothers would be back a long ways away, you know, kind of watching that we didn't hurt them or anything, which we wouldn't have anyhow, you know. And so we'd give them canned stuff and soap or anything like that, and but they mostly want something to eat. You give them stuff to eat, and then they'd run carrying it. their little short legs would just get such a kick out of them, because there wasn't around many kids in them days, you know, and then you'd be around them little kids. It was kind of fun. And they was hungry, there's no question about it. They was real hungry. And then they put these ships, they brought them to the harbor there, and they loaded these people on them, all the older men and the women and the kids and stuff, and then took them over to some other island, you know, and so they wouldn't get hurt, you know, to try to save their lives and stuff. And I thought it was terrible. It's a guy standing around these girls, you know, and they had just, the toilets would just sit on top of the deck, you know, and run water through them, you know, and boards across, you know. And they'd have to try to sit down on them things, go to the bathroom, you know. Of course, all these guys watch, and you can tell they're embarrassed. Heck wouldn't have it, but they were still alive anyhow, and they were getting off of there.
Do you recall the day the war ended?
Yeah, well, the first day it ended, we all celebrating and having a big time, and then we was up about all night, and then early the next morning, the cruiser right behind, near where he's at, got bombed and took a suicide. And that exploded the whole, that, it was just a rumor, it wasn't over yet. And then about a week later, it's really over, and we didn't celebrate or nothing, we just kept on doing what we were doing. Happy that it was over, but we didn't want to get fooled again, you know.
That original celebration, was that afterward that the bombs had dropped, or?
No, it was before the bombs got come in bombing, and we thought the war was over.
There's another interesting story in your independent article. Some of your friends from the service wrote to your parents thinking you were dead. Could you tell that story?
Yeah, well, they thought we was all on the 21 guys that went up. They thought they found out we all went to Okinawa, and then they found out about the bomb and stuff going in there, and this friend of mine, you know, see, they moved them to the Philippines, so I couldn't write to him and tell him I was okay or anything. So they told them guys that we all got killed, and there was quite a few of them that did, but there was a lot of us that didn't, too. See, out of the 25, I think four got killed the first day we was there. And then, but anyhow, but he had my folks' address, and so he wrote to my folks, but he didn't tell them anything about that. He thought I was dead or something. He just wanted to, said he lost my address, wanted my address, and I wrote back to him, give him my address. And so we corresponded, and we met in near Tokyo, and after the war was over, he was stationed in Tokyo then. And so I got to see him then. And I've seen him several times since, but not lately, but he lives in Waukegan, Illinois.
Do you recall the day your service ended, and what were the circumstances?
The service ended, yeah. I got discharged and I was supposed to get a train home from Minneapolis. There weren't no trains. So I and another guy from Cherokee that we'd met up there, and of course I was living in Washita then, and I met him, and so we got acquainted anyhow. And so he said, well, we can't get the... He said, I got a brother in Storm Lake. If we get to Storm Lake, he'll take us to Cherokee. So the bus was running then because the trains was on strike. And I said, I'm not going to be a gentleman. It was about 2 in the morning we got out to the bus depot. And this one bus was headed, I forget what town, but it's going to be through Storm Lake. So we got tickets and we got on the darn thing and just... people standing up and everything else. So we got to ride Storm Lake. We got to Storm Lake about, I don't know, 2-3 in the morning, whatever it was. And he called his brother, and then he took us to Cherokee. And I went to my grandparents' house and woke them up. And so I had to call my family down in Washita and say that I was back home and where I was at. And my brother said, well, I ain't seen him for 4 years. He said, I'm going to get him. So he come up and got me.
What was the readjustment to civilian life like for you when you returned?
Oh, the jobs weren't too plentiful, you know, then. And I did some farm work, and then I went For a while, a friend of mine, a buddy of mine, before I went to service, he was black marketing corn pickers, and so I was going with him down, loading them, help load and stuff, you know. And I wasn't buying or anything to do with them, and bringing them up to Nebraska, and then they were selling them out there. And then I finally went to work for bookkeeper parts man for a Chevrolet garage at Cractionville. But that wasn't a very good paying job. You know, you get 25 a week.
Did you ever suffer nightmares or flashbacks upon your return home?
Yeah, I would. I did some for a couple years. And get up in the middle of the night and just wouldn't go back to bed. Or thinking about things, and it would bother you. And I don't know, it's quite a few years for it. There's some things I won't talk about to anybody. I never will, and it's over and done, and you know, it just won't. I don't even want it on my mind to think about it. So. But it's a. I don't know. My brother was, last time I saw him, he was talking about that. About, you know, waking up at night, and I'd be sitting on the edge of the bed crying, you know. Well, I can barely remember that, but I guess I probably was, or he wouldn't have said it, you know. But you get over it. It takes a little while. I think what hurts the worst is losing so many friends, you know. That you figure you'd be seeing some after the war, and you just didn't come home. But. But I don't know. It's a. I got a lot of experience. And seen a lot, and don't regret any of it. And just thankful that I lived through it and was all right. War is really kind of a terrible thing. You just think about it, Iraq over there, and people getting killed that are innocent people, you know, they don't have no axe to grind or anything. No, worse. Just ought to be a better way to settle stuff than that.
Do you feel like your military experience influences your thinking about war or about the military in general?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
How so?
Yeah, I think you just remember how rough it was, and it's just, I suppose, nothing. I suppose some people think they're a hero or something. There's some heroes come out, and they probably are, but the heroes are the ones that don't come back, I think, you know. Just doesn't seem necessary. This doesn't seem necessary at all. I don't know. Like what we're doing over there in Iraq, I can't see where we're gaining anything over there. Maybe we'll take time, yeah.
Expand on that a little bit. Do you think your military experience has influenced you politically in any way?
No. No, not at all.
Did you make use of the GI Bill when you returned?
No, and I wished I had a, you know, and I didn't. I should have went to college and stuff, and I didn't. And I had it there, I should have went, you know, I would have had some. But I ended up working in garages, which I kind of planned to do, and then the job come open there at Meriden and for postmaster, and I got into that job. And that was a good job. For didn't have to work too hard, or and just meeting people all the time. And it's a good job. So the college wouldn't have done me any good for that, but.
Do you ever watch today's war movies? And what do you think of those?
Oh, I watch some of the history ones, you know. And there's some of them pretty interesting because it tells about where stuff where I, places where I'd been and stuff, you know. And things. We had some, you know, like, I would like to have seen some, they showed, we took a ship got hit in the harbor and put a hole in it about, I suppose, 8-10 feet wide and high. And when our LCM, we took a piece of steel out to it, and welders and machine gun, a couple welders, and tied up alongside, and they welded that piece of steel on there to so they could take that ship back to Hawaii or someplace, or to, you know, to save it. And the news people was out there taking pictures of it and everything, and then they would like to see that. That would have been interesting. I remember the guy's names of the on the welders, Totsel and Johnson. They was hanging over the side of the ship and welding these steel. Well, it took about all day long to do it. I keep thinking if I watch some of this old tapes and stuff, I'll see that.
How do you feel your service and experiences affected your life?
Oh, I think I went in as a kid and I think I grew up awful fast, you know. I think it changed your attitude on everything, and I think you appreciate things a whole lot more than you would if I hadn't had that service, you know. I wouldn't appreciate things like I did when I come home. You really grew up, I think. I grew up in a hurry. And just appreciated things a whole lot more. I think all the guys did, you know. Seen any action or things and got home all right, and they would. You really appreciated your folks, you appreciated your life back in Iowa and things like that so much more. You know, they're always talking about these guys coming home from Vietnam and no welcome or anything. When I come home, see, I was pretty young, so I had to stay longer than most, but anyhow, when we come home, come to Treasure Island there in the harbor there, and they had the only people that welcomed us was